Hi, I'm Evalise Page, and thanks for listening to the Believe Big podcast, the show where we take a deep dive into your healing with health experts, integrative practitioners, biblical faith leaders, and cancer thrivers from around the globe. Welcome to today's episode on the Believe Big podcast. My name is Evalise Page, and today's episode is on a topic that every person you know needs to hear about. Right now, 1 in 2 men and 1 in 2.4 women will hear they have cancer in their lifetime. It's also been said that by the year 2030, those rates are expected to double. We at Believe Big and the Believe Big Institute of Health are dedicated to changing those statistics. Annual tests like colonoscopies and breast exams are helpful tools for detecting cancer, but they aren't preventing it. It's why I am excited for you to hear from my dear friend, Dr. Kirsten West, today on the top 5 things you can start doing today to prevent cancer. Dr. West is part of the integrative oncology team at the Reardon Clinic. She is a naturopathic doctor with a fellowship with the Oncology Association of Naturopathic Physicians. She also holds a master's degree in Oriental medicine and acupuncture and is a gifted writer and presenter on integrative medical topics. Welcome, Dr. West, to the show.
Oh, thanks, Evalise. It's great to be here.
We start every podcast and knowing what our guest's favorite health tip is. So can you share what your best tip is?
You know, I was thinking about this a lot. There's so many great ones out there. And I know that Dr. Tim spoke to the Gratitude Journal, and I think that's just amazing. So that's probably one of the top. But I think another very important piece is just to breathe. I think that we are so busy in our lives, on computers. We get so stuck in our heads that we forget about our body. And I think breathing, just stopping and breathing, is such an important, powerful thing we can do for our health.
Oh my goodness. Just as you were saying that, I'm like, okay, Evalise, breathe.
I think that's the way I think about it, because I need to tell myself to breathe all the time.
Such a good tip. And I'm so thankful you shared that one. Yeah. Many of the physicians I meet that specialize in oncology have a reason or story for deciding to work with cancer patients. And what made you decide to go into medicine and specialize in oncology?
It's a really good question. I grew up in a very conventional medicine background. My mom was a nurse. She ended up being head of patient outcomes at University of Colorado and was around a lot of medical doctors, nurses, et cetera, in standard of care, and really wanted to become a medical doctor. And then my grandmother ended up getting sick, stage 4 cancer. She was in New Hampshire. And so we flew her into Colorado to get the best care. And so she came in and I watched her go downhill. I know that they were doing everything in their power to help her. I was so thankful for that and that their hearts were in the right place. But I saw her develop a lot of side effects. I saw the treatments cause a lot of debilitation. And I think in the long run, the cancer did get her, but I think that a lot of the side effects and sequelae from those treatments ended up taking her as well. And so after she passed, I was finishing up college. And while I was looking into medical school, I was looking into other things, and I ended up meeting 2 naturopathic doctors who practice in Denver, because I was like, maybe this is another avenue I should think about. And one of those doctors, Dr. Jacob Shore, who is incredible, and I will always attribute so much to him for my path, but he specialized in integrative oncology. And I learned all of these things that I could have potentially done for my grandmother had I known. And that was such a light bulb moment for me of, this is what we need to be doing for patients. We need to be helping to foster the terrain while the other doctors, your medical oncologist, radiation oncologist, are going after the cells. But if we don't work and support the body through all of that, we're not going to get as far as we could. And who knows? It's so hard to say now what would have happened if I had known what I had known. But I feel like that was a gift for me to start this journey and do what I'm doing.
Well, and I'm so grateful for that. You have helped so many of our patients over the years. I can't even count them. And so we're so grateful for all that you do. And I always feel like God does not waste our pain. And so what you saw and experienced with your grandmother is now being paid forward 1,000-fold for others. Yeah. And almost letting her influence you in deciding to go on the side of medicine is going to impact, has impacted, and will continue to impact so many lives in the future. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Of course.
So from your clinical perspective of working with oncology patients over the years, what would you say are the most common patterns of those that get diagnosed with cancer?
I thought about this a lot because obviously, and I know so many people are familiar with Dr. Nash's Terrain 10, and those Terrain 10 are big and they are important. In clinical practice, we tend to see, at least I've tended to see, along with some of my colleagues, about five that tend to be the most important. And so of those five, I think stress, which also includes trauma, and stress can be from past too. It doesn't just need to be where we are right now. So stress, metabolic imbalance, inflammation. And inflammation is, gosh, it's just a cornerstone for everything because everything ties into inflammation. I think environmental toxins. And then I also think about immune function in the microbiome. So those are the five patterns that I think I tend to see those the most in clinical practice.
I hear that all the time. And it's just, wow, people don't realize, they think it's a fluke thing or it's just a genetical thing. And what you're sharing and we'll share today, I know is going to impact so many. I know we're going to focus on the top five things a person can do to prevent cancer. But before we go there, can you share your best advice for someone who's listening today that has cancer, or they just find out they have cancer? What would be your best advice for them?
Breathe. I think the word cancer has so much behind it, and there's so much fear involved when you get the diagnosis, and you feel like you have to jump into everything right away and do everything. But we need to remember that this is something that probably took about 7 to 10 years to start. And so making sporadic decisions overnight without really having all the information or gathering a support group is probably not the best idea. So that's where taking your time, really breathing, thinking things through is important. So that's probably my number one recommendation, because there are so many resources out there. I think having a really strong team, not just your doctors, but also family and community, is imperative. And that's how you get, you go through this journey, because the diagnosis of cancer can be very isolating. And it doesn't need to be.
I completely agree. And with all the things that patients can do to integrate their care, it doesn't have to be the end of life as you know it.
No.
You can have incredible quality of life going through something difficult. And we see it every day. And so it hurts my heart when I see people that aren't incorporating these integrative practices, because they are suffering. They are experiencing that cancer-related fatigue and the nausea, the vomiting, all those things that can be mitigated by these integrative therapies that you all do at the Reardon Clinic. So I love that you said that. Let's do a countdown on your top five list.
Okay. Let's do it.
All right. So what would be number five?
I think number five would be cultivating community. They call it a practice of medicine because it's a practice. I will never forget when I got out of medical school, someone said, medical school teaches you how to be a safe doctor, but it doesn't teach you how to be a good doctor. And so it really is the practice of medicine. And as I've worked with oncology patients over the years, I have discovered how important community is. And I think that we have gotten away from that in our social media world. And we are social creatures, but it's not, we aren't meant to be social on computer. We're meant to be with other people. And so I think cultivating community is a really large aspect of that. And they have actually done studies on ovarian cancer, breast cancer, that women who have a strong social network, specifically with other women, sorry guys, but it's been with women, that they have significantly improved overall survival rates. So there's something there for that. Yeah.
Wow. I completely agree. And we've also been in a really weird season of everyone having to move inward.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure that even made it even more difficult. But there's a comedian, Sebastian. I don't know if you've ever heard him. He is hilarious. You have to Google him. He's an Italian comedian. He does this skit on this, and it's hilarious and sad at the same time. It's called the doorbell skit. And he compares our response to someone knocking on our door today versus 20 years ago. So basically, he shares how in the past, when someone came to your door, it was a family event. Everyone rushed to the door to see who it was. There weren't phones, cell phones. Everyone was checking and texting. And people would just stop by if they were in the neighborhood. And then he's like, today, people are hiding and saying, wait, did you invite someone over? Do you invite someone over? Who's at the door?
It's so true.
And everything is Amazoned in instead of asking neighbor for an ingredient you're missing or can I borrow this? We really, like you're saying, need to be intentional about what it means to live a vibrant, full life with those within our community, even within our 5-mile radius of each other, as author Jeannie Allen says. And so I truly believe that is so true because we're not meant to do life alone.
We're not.
And if someone wants some great ways to build community locally within their neighborhood, get the book, Find Your People. It is great.
That's
it has great ideas.
That's a great recommendation. I always think I will remember this story. My mom, we had a great neighbor and she never went grocery shopping and she and my mom were really close. So she just come over to our house and go grocery shopping in the fridge. So I always laughed at that. I was like, that's hilarious. But there's an example of community.
So true. And I miss that from my Puerto Rican culture. In Puerto Rico, my grandmother would be cooking from morning to night and she would make these huge pots of rice and beans and everything she was making. And I'm like, what? It's only just us. Why are you making so much? She's like, we don't know who's going to stop by. So they always made enough for whoever would stop by. So I love that. And I love that neighbor of yours. So what's number four?
Okay. Number four, I would say, gosh, when we're doing the countdown, I really do feel like these are all just as important. Yes. But I think number four would be eating an anti-inflammatory diet. It's so easy for us to have processed foods. And then the other thing that happened is people get away from peanuts or get away from gluten is almonds tend to become a big part of our diet. And those are super high in omega-6. And the American diet, and I know you had Jess Kelly on and she talked quite a bit to this. And I love Jess. But the thing about the American diet is that we tend to be so overloaded in omega-6s and we don't have enough omega-3. And omega-3 are anti-inflammatory foods. And if we know that inflammation is one of the largest drivers of cancer, then the first thing we can do is be aware of what we're putting in our mouth. And I think one of my favorite things that I always recommend my patients is fish oil, olive oil. I think we have some really therapeutic oils out there that can be helpful. And then really trying to stay away from unprocessed foods and eating whole foods. Going back to being social creatures, we were also meant to eat whole foods. We weren't meant to have processed things.
You're absolutely right. And I think for the omegas, one thing that I'm always surprised about and is that the bad oils that are out there and in everything, even healthy dressings at Whole Foods. I'm like, oh my goodness, look at this canola oil in there. And so list the omega-6, the bad oils, so that people should look on the back of a label or know to stay away from.
Yeah. So canola oil, corn oil, a diet heavy in almonds. I would try to stay away from flaxseed oil. I get a lot of patients who are taking a bunch of flaxseed oil because they hear that it's very therapeutic. But the problem with flaxseed oil is it can go down the pro-inflammatory pathway. So I would stay away from flaxseed oil too. I think it's easier to really focus on those. I would stay away from cashews. There's a lot of cashew products out there now too. So really, I think it's easier to tell people what oils to focus on. And that would be fish oil and olive oil. Obviously, you don't need to put fish oil on food. That would be really disgusting. But you can eat your cold water fish. You can take your fish oil supplements. And then I always tell people, Evelise, olive oil, use it as a condiment. That's how they use it in Italy. Put it on the table. When you finish cooking, add your olive oil to it. More power to you.
I love that. And it's true. I was told, and you can confirm this for us, that you shouldn't cook high heat though with olive oil. It should be with dressings and things like that. What are some good oils that we can cook with?
So what I do is I will spray a light layer of coconut oil down or avocado oil. Those are my two favorites. I'll spray those down just to stop the sticking. And we use stainless steel. So we do that in the stainless steel. Otherwise, everything will stick. And then when we get it off the stove, that's when we add a bunch of olive oil to it. And when you get a good olive oil, it's a whole different ballgame. And you smell the olive, you taste the olive, and it just changes your food. And it makes you feel like, gosh, I really am doing something good for myself.
How do you know you have a good olive oil?
That's a really good question. So interesting, the mafia did get involved with olive oil production in our country. So we can't be sure that all the olive oils that we're getting are true straight olive oil. So some of them are laced with corn oil, canola oil, things like that. You can Google articles that list the best forms of olive oil. And no joke, Costco actually has some of the best olive oil. It comes in a big plastic. I'm not a fan of plastic containers, but it does come in a big plastic container. And then the other olive oils that are great are the Whole Foods 365 brand, which aren't that expensive either.
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So I think we get into this mentality of, I have to spend so much money to get high quality anything. But for olive oil, that's not always the case.
That's encouraging to hear, because I would look at Whole Foods. I'm like, extra virgin. Oh, it comes from Italy. It has to be good. Those are good tips. Yeah. All right. So what is number three?
Number three would be, and I'm so big on this, and I just find the data on fasting so fascinating, and it makes so much sense when we really think about it, but getting at least 13 hours a night away from food, the key to that's going to be 3 hours between finishing dinner and going to bed.
Okay. What are some things that people can do? Should they start off with 13 hours immediately, or should they ease into it? What is the best way to do that?
I would say that if they could at least begin, the hardest part for people, especially in the summer, is getting that 3 hours between finishing dinner and bedtime. I think that's the hardest piece. So if people can start to focus on that, I think that's number one. If the body's metabolizing overnight, if you don't have enough time, it creates a bunch of oxidative stress when you're sleeping and pushes a lot of growth hormone. And we don't want to do that. That's not good for risk of cancer. It's not good for disease in general. We also don't sleep well. If our body's still working on digesting food, we're not going to sleep well. So I would say that would be the number one thing. And then as they extend it longer, and you think about it, another 10 hours, if you go to bed at, gosh, 10 p.m., you could have breakfast at 8 a.m., right? That's not horrible. It's just really making sure that you're finishing eating earlier in the day before.
And I was told, and you can tell me this, that women who are premenopausal or menopausal, like, you should be careful with fasting. What do you say about that?
I think it depends on the person. I think it depends on stress response. Because obviously, if someone's perimenopausal or going through menopause, hormones are all over the place. This is where testing can come in to see what's going on with hormones and detoxification, hormonal metabolism, and cortisol levels. And if we can get a good picture there, because if someone is going through perimenopause or menopause and they fast and they have issues, it speaks to something else going on.
Okay. That's why it's so important to be connected with an integrative doctor like yourself, because it gives you that peace of mind. So many times we think we're doing the right things and we're accidentally harming ourselves more than helping ourselves because we hear someone share this great tip somewhere and we're like, oh, I got to incorporate that. Right. Meanwhile, for ourselves, it can actually be harming us. So I love that you said that, because integrative practitioners are doing that testing each year and really looking at your levels closely and individualizing your care for what is best for you. It's great.
Yeah, test, assess, address. To add on to that really quick is that I think what happens for women too is there can be some shame. If they try to do something that they feel is right and it's not working for them, they feel like something's wrong with them or they're not doing what they should be for their health. And a lot of times, like I said, there's reasons for that. And being able to empower them to make changes is important.
That's great. All right. Number two.
Number two would be to move. I think, like you and I, we're sitting here now on a podcast. I do this all day. I'm usually sitting down and I want to get a standing desk, but being pregnant right now, I have swollen feet. So that's not going to help me either right now. But we do need to be moving. And I'm sure that you've heard this, and I'm sure a number of people have heard this, but sitting is considered the new cigarette or smoking. So we need to be getting up. I would say every 45 minutes, get up and move for, even if it's 2 or 3 minutes, you're moving your body. You're getting your blood flowing. You're getting your lymphatic system flowing. It's important. We need to be doing that. And we're meant to be moving. Again, going back to ancestors, we weren't sitting at a desk all day. We were hunting. We were gathering food. We were migrating. We need to be moving. I do think that at least 20 to 30 minutes a day of some form of routine exercise where you're devoting to that movement is important. But we can't think, oh, well, we did the 20 to 30 minutes this morning, so now it's fine for us to sit all day. Good, you don't point. Have to keep exercising, but it's important to move. So I think movement is important.
Good point. And I think some people think that it has to be like in a gym, or I have to be riding a stationary bike or on a treadmill. And it could be walking your dog around the neighborhood. My husband and I just started playing disc golf. I love it. I do things that you enjoy. And then that way we always stick to it.
Yep, exactly. Find something you love. Because if you don't, you're not going to stick to it.
All right, I'm doing the drum roll. Number one tip for preventing cancer.
Okay, I'm coming right back to the beginning. Breathe. I thought there's so much more to this than just breathing. And the thing is that, first of all, breathing gets us in our body. It helps to root us again, but it also helps us to be in our true nature. And I think that we're, like I said, heady or busy doing other things, that we get out of that. We forget what our true nature really is. And there's other things that we're defining ourselves by. And there's something so special and sacred about just being with ourselves. And so breathing enables that to happen. Meditation is another avenue there. And then not only being in our true nature, but also being in nature. There's been studies showing that trees put off something called phytoncides, which actually improve our immune function. And that's why in Japan, so many people go forest bathing. And forest bathing means that they're just essentially out in the trees.
Wow.
So breathing has so much involved in it, but that is the number one. Let's get back to our true state.
I love that. And is there a certain way we should breathe?
I've been reading a lot about trauma work and how we store trauma in the body. And one thing that we need to think about when we breathe is that when we inhale, that's a sympathetic response. And when you do it, if you ever got a stethoscope and listened to your heart when you're breathing, you'll notice that when you take your in-breath, your heart starts beating faster. And that's sympathetic. That's fight or flight response. Not that we're in a fight or flight, but those are the two different ends of the sympathetic versus parasympathetic. When you exhale, that's parasympathetic. So what you want to try to focus on when you breathe is try to make your exhalation longer than your inhalation, because that's going to tell your body that everything's okay and that you're at peace and that you're grounded.
Wow, that's a great tip. And that's easy to do anywhere.
It gets you focused and present if you're paying attention.
I love it. I don't know if you've heard, it's called the 1 minute pause, and it walks you through those breathing exercises, but it also walks you through a meditative prayers and reflection. It's wonderful to set your mind in the morning and at night, right before you go to bed. My husband, Jimmy's doing their 30-day challenge, and he said it's really transformed not only his ability to handle what's happening in the world, but also his faith. That's a great tip for someone who just wants someone to help guide them through that. Yeah. That is a great app. Do you have one that you've seen that is helpful?
I use Calm. I've been using Calm a lot. There's so many out there. And Insight Timer there is a woman on there. She has some beautiful mantras that have let me in tears at some points. You can go for someone guiding you through it. Some of the mantra meditations are really powerful. Just like prayer. And it can help us in a lot of ways as well.
As we close, I know we shared our number one, but we're going to share a little bonus for everyone. I would love to hear from you what tests you recommend for every person to have done every year. I know most conventional doctors only do the basics like a CBC or vitamin D levels and only when something's wrong. But what are the essentials?
Gosh, that's such a great question. Obviously, CBC, CMP, which is your complete metabolic panel. I think the three inflammatory markers, which a lot of people refer to as the trifecta, which is your CRP, LDH, and ESR, are important. They represent different types of inflammation, chronic, moderate, acute. So if you get all three, you get a really good idea of where the body's at. And then I think we forget a lot about the metabolic piece. You know, where's your hemoglobin A1C? Where's your blood sugar on an average basis? What about IGF-1? IGF-1 is a growth factor. Vitamin D, you spoke to that. Obviously important. I think looking at a simple ANA, which is an autoimmune marker, is really good, because I can't even tell you the number of times that that'll come up positive on labs and people have no idea. And isn't it good for us to see, geez, the immune system might be focused on some things it shouldn't be focused on. Let's get it back to doing what it needs to be doing. Gosh, there's so many others. Fibrinogen is a great one. Ferritin is a big one, looking at iron storage, especially in menstruating women.
Why is that?
Because ferritin is your iron storage. So for women who are menstruating monthly, especially if they're not eating red meat or more vegan or vegetarian, ferritin can dip quite a bit, and don't want ferritin to be too low, because if ferritin's too low, it can promote anemia and decreased oxygenation of cells. It can cause depression. It can cause fatigue and low stamina. And so a lot of times when women come and they have chronic fatigue or they're depressed or they're not sleeping, it's as simple as, gosh, your ferritin levels are too low and you're anemic.
What about magnesium levels? I've been hearing so much about figuring out what your levels are, because they can cause everything from migraines to sleeping.
Absolutely. Magnesium is so big, and it is the one nutrient that we tend to be most deficient in this country, because we've really lost it from the soil. That's one of my main recommendations for patients, aside from fish oil, is to take magnesium. There's also been some data showing that people with low magnesium, it's correlated with low glutathione. And glutathione is our master antioxidant. So here we go. There's this big web, right? Like everything's interconnected.
Yes. I go in monthly because especially when I'm traveling a lot, I go get a Myers and it has the glute push because I found that really helps me to stay strong and keep my energy and consistency and knowing that I'm getting those essential minerals and vitamins, especially when I know heavy travel is coming ahead. So
yeah,
those are some easy ways people can do that. I've heard that walk-in labs that you can actually self-pay.
Walk-in labs, you can self-pay. I really do recommend working with a practitioner who's going to outline the best labs because they're going to be the ones to go over them with you. And just to reiterate, and I know that this has probably been spoken about before, those ranges on labs are not the ranges that we really want to pay attention to. We want to pay attention to optimal ranges because those ranges are based on the standard American population of whatever area you're in. And we know that the standard population in America is not the healthiest. So really getting labs optimal. That's what I always tell my patients. I'm like, I want to make your body as inhospitable to disease as we can. And that's by looking at the labs, it's a way for us to monitor and make sure we're moving in the right direction.
I'm so glad you said that because that's even one when I was going through my cancering process that my oncologist would look at my labs after I was NED, no evidence of disease. And he would say, oh, everything's in a normal range. You're good to go. And I would take those same labs and take it to my integrative doctor. And he would look at them and he goes, oh, Evalise, this one is on the very low side of normal. And I need that to be on the high side. And this is going to affect the lymphocytes and all these. He sees the whole picture of the puzzle of how that works and how they really integrate everything to make us the best version of ourselves.
Evalise, you spoke to that when you are declared disease-free in remission, that's usually the time where you want to feel as empowered as you possibly can. This is not going to happen again. Do everything you can to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So that's where testing can be really important.
For those listening who are post-cancer, it's really important for your physician to continue to monitor those cancer markers. Every year, my CEA, my CA-125, and the others, just to make sure that nothing is brewing that we can't take care of. And it's so important to know that.
Yeah. And one last part now that in my brain's going is the epigenetics. Epigenetics are also a really big, and nutrigenomics is becoming a big field. And nutrigenomics is tying in by looking at epigenetics. And I'll just speak to epigenetics really quick.
Can you explain to people who aren't sure what epigenetics are?
Yeah. Epigenetics, I know, because it's a big word. It's basically, you think about your genes as the blueprint and the epigenetics are kind of like the contractors. So you've been given genes from your parents and epigenetics can be turned on or off to express certain genes. So it's important for us to look at epigenetic pictures because that can also help us to evaluate what do we need to be more concerned with for a given person. And I spoke to nutrigenomics, which is basically putting together, looking at epigenetics and which nutritional aspects may be more important. You have people who are like, I want to do full-blown keto, or I'm going to do completely vegan or vegetarian. And really, if you put the epigenetics together with labs, you get a better picture of actually, this might be better for you than that.
Thank you for adding that. Is there anything else that I didn't ask that you think would be helpful in the prevention of cancer before we close out the episode?
I don't think so. I think those are the big ones. I think if we wanted to add one more, like a baby six onto the list of things to prevent would be watching what you're putting on and in your body. That's a big one. And to make that one great resource is EWG.org, which is the Environmental Working Group. Easy website for anyone to get on. And man, you can put in your cosmetics, your household cleaning agents, and just see where they are on the list of toxic or non-toxic.
That's a great tip. Thank you, Dr. West, so much for taking time out of your very busy day to speak with us today. We are so grateful for all that you do.
It's been a pleasure. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support our podcast, please subscribe and share it with others. Be sure to visit believebig.org to access the show notes and discover our bonus content. Thanks again and keep believing big.